Accession number 29054, Mr. Binwell's Reel 2. Now, anything else happen or any other developments, you know, in 1941-42 while you're sort of moving towards the time when you would be called up or volunteer?
I remember the time at Dunkirk, certainly, and being worried about my brother.
Now tell us about that, because, you know, that's a sort of personal side to...
Yeah, well, he was over in France. I remember at a place called Béthune, which was in northern France, and he was in the Royal Artillery. He was a sergeant fitter on the 25 pound artillery guns, and of course when the Germans broke through into Belgium and through the Ardennes, we just didn't know anything, and then you know, Dunkirk came and still we didn't know anything, and then eventually we did get a phone call from him to say he was back in this country. I think all he got on when he got back was his vest and a pair of pants. That was about it, because he was on the beaches for about 3 days, and eventually his officer grabbed hold of a boat, like a large rowing boat type of thing, and a lot of other servicemen tried to get into this boat, and the officer drew his gun and said, "This boat is for my men. Anybody else who tries to get in, I'll shoot them." And they got in this boat and got out to, I think, a destroyer, and that got them back to England. And because they'd been on the beaches for 3 days, I think, and it was pretty grim. He wouldn't talk about it a lot, but I remember getting down on my hands and knees and praying for my brother to be saved, basically.
What state was he in when you saw him? I mean, did it affect him, his experiences?
He used to have nightmares after the war, certainly, about his time at Dunkirk and in Burma as well. But he's been back to Dunkirk. He actually emigrated to Australia about 45 years ago, and... he used to come back to UK. He came back with his wife and two of his five children in the early days, and then he used to come on his own. He used to save up and come, and on one of the occasions he said, "I'm going back to Dunkirk," and he went to Dunkirk and sort of found out where he was on the beaches and this sort of thing, and it's something he'd always wanted to do, and I think that laid a few of the ghosts for him, really.
Anything else before anything else? Any other major memories also that we haven't covered of the period while you were back in Leicester?
No, not really that I can think of. No, as I say, in October of 42, I was in the Air Training Corps, and I went to. An interview to get into the Fleet Air Arm at Cambridge.
Now, why the Fleet Air Arm? Why not the RAF?
That's a good question. I don't know what I can really answer. There was just something a bit romantic about flying off ships that appealed to me. Although, to be quite honest, I'm scared of water. I'd learnt to swim. It's one of the few sports that I undertook which I never enjoyed. I always wanted to be in a situation where I wanted to put my foot on the bottom, as it were, rather than not knowing where the bottom was. And so why the Fleet Air Arm, God only knows, but it was just something that appealed to me.
Possibly after your dad.
Yeah, I think that had something to do with it.
Now, and, how did you... Now, were you volunteering or were you being called up? Because it sounds like you're volunteering here.
I'm volunteering,
before
yeah.
Before you got called up.
Because I was only 17 at the time. So, and you couldn't go in until you were 18.
So what happened at this interview at Cambridge? What do you remember
of
that?
Well, I had a medical, and I went in front of a board of three naval officers, a captain, a commander, and a lieutenant commander. They asked me, the captain, I think, was an education with the blue in between his rings, and he asked me a number of questions about, you know, an aircraft over the channel, it's losing so much height, it's 20 odd miles from the coast, it's losing height at this much per minute, would he make land or wouldn't he, and this sort of thing. And the two and a half ringer was asking me, pointing to various pictures of aircraft, saying what aircraft's that, what aircraft's that, you see. And but when I had the medical, there was one part of it where you had to blow mercury up a U-tube and hold it there for 30 seconds. And for some reason, I couldn't do this. I was going blue in the face, and I could not hold this mercury up this U-tube.
Presumably this is measuring lung capacity? Or
well, I think, well, yes, obviously it was. And anyway, at the end of the interview, they said, well, you've not passed the part of the medical that is required for pilots. We cannot let you go on a pilot's course. We'll accept you on a telegraphist air gunner's course, which was a great disappointment to me, but I thought, well, at least I'm going to be flying. So I became what was known at that time as an RNY entry. I don't know whether you've heard about this.
What is that?
You were given a badge, which I wore on my ATC uniform. In fact, I've still got it in my scrapbook, I think. It's called, it's just a dark blue badge with red lettering on, which says RNYE, and it was I think it meant Royal Naval Youth Entry. I think that's what the letter stood for, and I had this badge on my ATC uniform, and I was known as an RNY entry. But this was given to me, I think I've still got that somewhere, in about October of 42.
42.
I was 17 in 42.
Of
yeah.
course, sorry, it's my mistake.
And I was called up 2 weeks after my 18th birthday. And I was sent...
So that would be in December?
42. Actually, it was New Year's Eve, because I remember it very well.
Tell me about it. I mean, was it? We're not expecting it, I presume, just then.
Well, no. I was sent to Butlin's Holiday Camp Skegness, which was known in those days as HMS Royal Arthur. And I remember I took a little attaché case, and I got a train from Leicester, and I had to change at Grantham. And there was a chap on the station there with a similar case to mine and looked about my age. And I did go up to him and say, you're not heading for HMS Royal Arthur, are you? He said, yes, he was. And he was a Scot. And his name was Bill Orr. And we... O-double-R, yeah. And we immediately struck up a friendship, you know, and we stuck together at Butlin's. And
now, what was he like, this Bill Orr? Just to, you know, what you know, was it just coincidence you'd met him, or was he a likeable chap?
He was a likeable chap, and we hit it off. We were easily talking to one another, and they put us in a chalet in Butlin's.
Now, what was your reception like? You know, when you got there, you're a nervous young lad. You've met this Bill Orr. What happens when you sort of get to Skegness?
Well, we were allocated a chalet, and we made sure that we got this chalet together. Bearing in mind it was January on the East Coast, and it was bloody cold, you know. And they had a heating pipe about 2 feet long and about that much round, about a couple of inches diameter, and they put that on for 2 hours every night, and it had no effect at all because you could see the stars through the roof anyway. But the contraption they had, it was like a double bed, and at the bed head and the base there was like a wooden thing with slots in which they slotted planks, and you slept either side of the planks, you see. Well, the first night we were frozen, and I said to Billaw, I said, I'm not queer and I'm sure you're not. Let's take the bloody planks out and pull our blankets and try and keep bloody warm together, you see, which is what we did. And we were there, we're at Skeggy at HMS Royal, I think for about 6 weeks. Yeah. I know one of the jobs. Or
hang on, what about kitting? Because we take it in, we're quite interested in early training, so we're going to run through it if you don't mind. What about kitting out? I mean, you must have been kitted out.
Yes.
What did you get kitted out with? Can you remember?
Well, yes, the old naval bell bottoms, the top and the collar, like, and the round hat. Whether it had, of course, I didn't have ship's name. It just had HMS on it. And I do remember the food was horrible.
Now, what was horrible about it?
Well, it was just not good to look at, and it didn't taste much. But I remember when we were allowed out, there was a chip shop in Skeggy.
Hang on, stick to the food. Try not to run off. The food, I mean, it didn't look nice, and it tasted wrong. I mean, what was wrong with it? What was going wrong? Was it just bad ingredients, or was it bad cooking, or was it bad preparation?
It often wasn't very hot either, you know. And you used to eat in these enormous halls. I remember one was called Kent House, and there were literally hundreds and hundreds of naval people in there, you had to go in at certain times because they couldn't feed you all at once. And I just remember it was a rude awakening, having had my mother's cooking for all those years.
Was there enough of it?
Was enough, but you know, you were glad to be able to get off and go to a chip shop in town where there were.
What was a typical day's training like? Because that'll pick up most of it. Because this is your naval training, yeah. Nothing to do with the.
You did the basic, you know, teaching you how to march.
How did you cope with drill? I mean, you had a little tiny bit of it with the air training cover. What did you think of naval drill, of generally marching about in formation?
Well, we had one of these three badge blokes who had been in the Navy about 40 years, I think, and he used to sort of be like a father to us, I suppose, in a way. But I remember one of the drills I had to learn was the funeral drill, because as I say, it was January and people were literally dying of pneumonia, I remember learning how to rest on your arms reverse and doing basically the funeral drill for when, and I was part of the sort of funeral party when somebody died of pneumonia or some other cause. And that was a bit of a rude awakening to me, in that, you know, I hadn't sort of thought about that sort of thing, about funeral drills and this sort of thing, but, you know, I suppose it's natural that it happened.
Were you good at drill? I mean, it's because some people have got penguins and things like that. They got things wrong with it.
Yeah, some people can't coordinate their arms and legs. I remember one chap, and he never could get it. His arm and his leg were going the same instead of, you know, opposite to the leg. And some people just couldn't get it at all. But it was not a problem to me at all.
Did you like drill? Did you understand why you had to do it?
Well, yes, I understood it was all part of naval discipline, and discipline is important, of course, in the armed forces. If you haven't got discipline, you've got, you know, people don't carry out orders and so on. Or if they haven't got the discipline. I also remember we used to have to fire watch there, on top of these big halls.
Tell me about that.
Well, if you, when you were on fire watching duty, you had to be on the top of these halls, which were, and the wind came off the North Sea in Norfolk there, and by God, it was cold. I mean, you got a great coat by that time, but it was still damn cold being on top of there for about 4 hours at a time. I can tell you, it really was cold.
And nothing happened, I presume.
Well, no, we didn't have any rays whilst I was there. No.
Now, what about things that, pick out some of the other things of basic training that normally is part of. What about PT? Are you doing much physical training?
Yes, you did quite a lot of PT.
What kind of stuff?
The other thing I could remember, we had to learn how to sling a hammock.
Hang on, I'll come back. Sticking with PT, what kinds of physical training were you doing?
Well, you know, the arms and legs jumping apart and this sort of thing, and a bit of running and this.
Any assault courses or?
No, I can't remember doing any assault courses.
Did it improve your fitness, do you think? Because you've got this problem with lung capacity, although that might have just been on that day. I mean, do you think it improved your overall fitness?
I was pretty fit anyway. I used to do a lot of athletics. I was in the Leicester Colleges of Art and Technology Athletic Club, and I was the 100 and 200-yard champion at school. And
so this business about your lung capacity is just some sort of fluke?
When I was about 14, I was playing cricket with the lads on the what we used to call the old gardens, which was a strip of waste ground at the end of the street I used to live on, and somebody hit this ball up in the air, and I was going to catch it, but the sun was in my eye, and it came down and hit me on the nose. And I think it broke my nose. I didn't go anywhere, but I always had difficulty then breathing out of the right hand side of my nostril, particularly in later years when things like central heating came in, and I'll tell you about that a bit later on. But I think that had something to do with it, and probably one of the reasons why I wasn't a very good swimmer, because I couldn't get the breathing right. But nevertheless, I as I say, I played a lot of football, cricket, and I held the school record for 100 and 200 yards, which was not broken, I think, for about 14 years. So, but I was never any good at long distance. I couldn't do the 800 yards as it was in those days. I couldn't do the cross country. I used to go in for it, but I never came anywhere. So I was about 100 out of 150 or something like that, you know.
So your physical fitness, it didn't the RAF didn't really improve. Sorry, the Navy didn't really improve it. It was just.
No,
you're already fit.
When I went in, I was pretty fit, you know.
Now, what about other training? Did they do any weapons training? Rifle training, bayonet training, anything like that?
Didn't do any bayonet training. I can't remember actually firing a gun at HMS Royal Arthur. That came later when I went to the next stage of my training, I think. It was just basically doing basic drills and this sort of thing. No other subjects, really, like navigation or anything like that at that stage.
Any basic seamanship, you know, just knots and...
Yes, you would taught knots, taught how to sling a hammock. Because I remember...
You were telling me that before. Tell us about
that. They made us do that. The same day we had the smallpox thing, which causes your arm to swell, and you tend to get... I got very feverish that night, and there was teaching us how to sling hammocks, and I couldn't get my damned arm up to get the thing to tie the knot in it. But we were slinging these hammocks between these chalets at the Butlin's Holiday Camp. I remember that part of it, certainly.
Any other seamanship? Any rowing cutters or anything like that?
No, it was just basic training, really. I can't remember that much about it at that stage.
How did you get on with the other recruits? I mean, you got on well with Bill, but what about the others? I mean, were they the same sort of lad as yourself, or did you find yourself a bit out on a limb?
No, I tried to get in, they had a football match and you had to put your name on the board and you know, I put my name on the board and they've got people there, Arsenal, Manchester City, Celtic, and I thought, God, what chance have I got? I'd played, you know, in local senior league, but I remember doing that. And another thing I remember is there was some chap who had gone AWOL, I think, and he was under close arrest. And I had to, he was in this bunk asleep, and I was there with a gun, and I was guarding him all night, like, you know. I talked to him, that sort of thing, but he didn't try and escape. He told me a bit about why he was in there. He decided he didn't like it, and he wanted to go home, and he sort of deserted and was obviously captured, and he was waiting to go on court-martial, I suppose, but and I had to sit there. I don't think the gun was loaded, actually. They'd got a bayonet on it, but I remember I was sort of sitting or standing there, and he was asleep in a bunk, and me just watching him.
But what about the other ones? I mean, did you get on with them, the other lads?
Yeah, I did, you know. It's the first time you've been away from home, really, and there are always some people who you don't get on with anyway, you know, but you tend to graduate to the ones you do get on with.
Was there any bullying amongst the recruits? I don't mean by the next stage up, I mean actually within the recruits.
I can't recall any bullying, no. I can't, honestly.
Did you make any good friends, other good friends, other than Bill Orr?
Well, yes, there was another chap who came from Leicester, a chap named Johnston, who lived at Anstey, which is a village not far out of Leicester. I remember, because we used to go home on the train together when we got leave, and one or two people like that at the time, I remember quite well.
What about the instructors? How did they behave? How did you get on with them? What did you think of them?
Well, as I say, the one I remember particularly was the one who had been in the Navy probably all his life, and they used to give you all these tips about going with girls and VD and this sort of thing, and I always remember, which again was a bit of an eye-opener, because I didn't know much about those sort of things, quite honestly, with not having a father and that. And I do remember in telling us how to look after ourselves and this sort of thing. And
so he sounds quite paternalistic.
He was, he was, he was.
Do you think they knew the stuff, the instructors? It was only basic drill, I suppose.
Well, that was it, you know. There were petty officers who were also there, and but they knew their stuff, yeah.
Now, anything else happened while you were there? How long were you there? You got there right at the beginning of January, 43.
I was there, I think, about mid-February. And then I was transferred to Gosport, which is just across the harbour from Portsmouth. Which is HMS St Vincent. You must have heard of this, I think, because all Fleet Air Arm, whether they were pilots, observers or air gunners, did their, again, basic training at HMS St Vincent. And we got there, as I say, about mid-February.
And what was it like? What was the setup at HMS Vincent? Was it the sort of layout of the camp?
There were these big barrack blocks, and there was this big parade ground in front of the barrack blocks with a large mast which you with rigging up to it, and where they used to have the button boy on the top and this sort of thing. And across the other side of the parade ground was the entrance to HMS St Vincent, which was like an archway with a guard room at the side. And the chief instructor was a chap named Wilmot, Chief Petty Officer Wilmot, And he was a legend. Anybody who was in the Fleet Air Arm who went to St Vincent would know CPO Wilmot.
Well, what was he like?
He was a big disciplinarian, certainly. I mean, when I ever used to see him, I used to run because it was the best thing to do. And
what made him stand out? Why was he so well known? I mean, he must have stood out. I mean, because there's lots of chief petty officers, isn't there?
Well,
why
yes.
Was he so famous?
Because he was the chief petty officer. The other people under him were petty. I mean, you were put into. I think there was a Collingwood house and various other admirals' houses, and we had a petty officer who was in charge of our little section, as it were. But we did start, because as I say, I was on this air gunners course, we did at St Vincent start doing basic Morse code, oldest lamp.
Now you said you had something to say, you'd done a bit of Morse code.
Yeah.
How did they train you in Morse code and all this? Well, Morse code first.
Well, you had these headphones on, and they started you off very slowly for a start. You know, you knew that I can remember quite a lot of the letters. Well, you know, the obvious one is di-di-di-da. They didn't say dots and dashes, it was diddy diddy da and da di da SOS, you know, and all these sort of things. And they started you off very slowly, and you gradually built up the speed, you see. And I found Morse code easy to do, and the oldest lamp as well, where they flash the Morse code to you by lamp rather than by hearing. But I do remember there was a chap from Birmingham named Doug Tonks who could not get this Morse code. We used to, me and another chap used to spend hours with old Doug Tonks trying to get him to do this Morse code. And, you know, you either take to it or you don't. And he just could not get it. And there was another big block at the back of where the main blocks were called the navigation block, and we used to go there for navigation, basic navigation.
Now tell me about your simple navigation. You know, your what does that mean, basic navigation?
Well, it was mainly sea navigation, how to find, take readings of various things, the use of flags as well as Morse code. You had to learn the various and the you know, I forget what they call that, where you sort of A, B, C and then around that way. I don't know whether my wife's there. See what happens. She thinks she's in the garden. She may not have heard, but it's all right. And
so but the navigation, because the flags would be, that's signals more, isn't it, the navigations?
Well, it is, yes. Morse code and...
But the navigation, what navigation training were you doing?
I'm not too clear about this, really, but it was basic sea navigation, how to take readings from the stars and various ways of finding your position. I'm not too clear on this particular side of it.